there's going to be a lot of finger pointing when those rate increases start to occur over the next few months, and they could start as early as next month in some places. California, our rate increases on our individual market will be public in mid-July, but they will be public in other parts of the country sooner than that. And then there will be the politics again with the allegations that this is the result of the underlying law and it's showing that it's in collapse. But on the other hand, for the people that are making it work, they will say it was working. We were turning the corner. We were about to, you know, there were many successes and it's being undermined by these policies. And so as much as I would like to get past that, I'm afraid we won't in California if they, I joke often, you may have heard me joke before, that gridlock never looked so good. The law, while it is flawed and we would like to see it improved, it is the law and it provides very significant support to millions of Californians. And so if they can't reach agreement on a change, we can make it work the way it is. And we will continue to make it work for as long as we have to until we can get to an environment where we can actually have constructive conversation about making it better.
Hi there, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is your host, Zach Morgan. With the CBO of the Senate healthcare bill due this week and a vote proposed before the July 4th recess, there's no better time than now to bring you my conversation with the woman advocating for California's Medicaid and insurance exchange on a national level, Secretary Diana Dooley, Director of the California Department of Health and Human Services. Her attitude is a self-described passionate moderate, and direct knowledge of healthcare policy on a state and national level will hopefully provide you with some answers and maybe even some peace of mind in an undoubtedly tumultuous time. When Diana Dooley began working as a temp analyst for Governor Jerry Brown during his first term in the 70s, she had no idea that she would become a permanent part of his team and continue to serve throughout the duration of his time in office. After following him out of office, she got her law degree and opened her own practice, but made the jump into healthcare when she left to serve as general counsel and vice president of Valley Children's Hospital, and eventually accepted the position as president and CEO of the California Children's Hospital Association. She never expected Governor Brown to run for office again, but when he was elected to his second stint in 2011, he once again called her into service, this time as secretary of the California Department of Health and Human Services. Now running the largest state health and human services department in the country, Secretary Dooley oversees the tremendous scope of health services provided by the state and also chairs Covered California, the state's insurance exchange established after the Affordable Care Act. Tasked with representing California's healthcare programs and funding needs to the federal government, her role as an advocate for the state took on new meaning following the election of Donald Trump and his promise to dismantle the ACA. There's a new sense of urgency to show that state exchanges, such as California, can be successful, but require the continued federal funding necessary to do so. However, unlike the frantic tone often heard from officials when speaking about the future of healthcare in America, you never get a doomsday-ish tone when speaking with Secretary Dooley. Despite the enormous challenges ahead, she remains optimistic. Not only that pragmatism can win out, but also that the ACA can work and that Covered California is strong and will survive no matter what is to come. We really hope that you've been enjoying our summer special weekly releases. Downloads of our recent string of powerhouse guests have been our highest ever, and the feedback we've received has been incredible. Thank you all so much. If you missed any of our recent releases, including author of From Obamacare to Trump Care, Why You Should Care, Harry Nelson, former Home Hero CEO Kyle Hill, former president of UCLA Health, Dr. David Feinberg, and CAPG President Don Crane, have no fear. All episodes are available on iTunes or Stitcher by searching Pop Health Podcast or on our website at pophealthpodcast.com. We would appreciate if you could follow, like, and comment on the show on iTunes or Stitcher so we can continue the show's momentum and ability to land the best guests. I'm also on Twitter at PopHealthZach, that's Z-A-C, and I'd love to connect with you there. As always, thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Secretary Dooley, thank you so much for joining me today and having me in your office up in beautiful Sacramento, California. Before we jump into it, are you from the Northern California area?
No, actually, I was born and raised in Central California between Fresno and Bakersfield. Okay. And grew up there and came up to Sacramento right after college and worked for 10 years and then went back to the Valley and then came back another 10 years ago. I've been here 11 years now.
Yeah, and I definitely want to go through kind of your history in politics and how you got to where you are now. But one thing we always like to start our show with is, can you tell the audience something that people might not know about you?
Well, I think most people know my age because I'm not secret about it. I'm 66 years old and I earned every single year, so I've never lied about my age. But I'm of a generation when people still took home economics, and I was actually a home ec minor, which as an attorney in government, and I was in private, we'll talk about my career in the private sector, but I think people would be surprised to know that I made my own clothes and I knit things for my grandchildren, and I love the distaff, as they used to call it.
Yeah.
So I was a home ec minor. I think that would surprise people.
Without veering off too far, are there certain things that you learned as a home ec minor that you think should still be taught today, or that you think people are actually missing out on from today? Because there are a lot of life skills that aren't taught in school necessarily anymore.
I completely agree. And I think we don't need to be so gender specific as home ec for the girls and wood shop for the boys, which right. was what it was when I was in grade school. But there are a number of how do you balance your checkbook?
Right.
How do you make purchases? How do you run a household? How do you repair things? You know, most kids, even my own children, they call a handyman. You know, nobody
right.
knows how to actually fix things. Kids don't even fix their cars anymore because they're all computerized. So some of it is just outdated, but certainly managing your household and your life needs some education.
I learned how to sew like a button of the suit back on. That's about the extent of it. But that made me very proud of myself, but I would be useless other than that. But.
Well, my husband sews his own buttons on still.
Oh, okay.
So.
Excellent. Well, without diverting too far from what I asked you here to talk about today, for the listeners who might not understand. So first of all, you're the California Secretary of Health and Human Services. What does your job entail? What can you give people an idea of what you do kind of on a day-to-day basis and who you oversee?
Sure. State government is, of course, led by the governor. And there are, 60 or 70 departments of variety of needs of state government. And they're organized into agencies. So they're grouped together and they each have a secretary. And the secretary works directly for the governor, is appointed by the governor, and is responsible for managing the programs. In my program area, Health and Human Services, there are 13 departments. It covers all of health services, Medi-Cal, public health, all of the social service programs, the welfare to work TANF, foster care, the licensing of facilities, healthcare facilities, the administration of the state hospitals for the mentally ill, and the services for the developmentally disabled, vocational rehabilitation services, planning services, emergency medical response. All of those are programs, child support services.
Yeah.
And most of those health and human services in California are actually administered at the county level.
Okay.
So California is what's called a local control state. So we set the policies and we oversee it, but the state doesn't actually provide the services. The services are provided either by county organizations or in health, for example, most of the actual health care is provided by private providers. It's
sure.
paid for in large part by the state for Medi-Cal. I'm also the chair of the Covered California,
right.
which is the health benefit exchange that was created under the Affordable Care Act. And so while that department is a separate department, I'm the chair of the board, and so I work very closely with the administration of that program as well.
So just a handful of things that
just
you're in charge
things.
Of. Yeah. Is there one of those things that tends to take up a majority of your day-to-day life?
Well, I think the bigger departments, certainly Medi-Cal is a very large program. One in three Californians is now served by the Medi-Cal program. Public health has over 200 different programs that have very complex financing and works with a lot of contractors as well as local government. And then the social services programs, the CalFresh, which is food stamps in California, all of the income support for the very poor, the foster care programs, all of those programs, just by their size and their scope, require a lot of attention. Sure. I usually describe the work that I do not so much about each program, because on any given day, any program might need some intervention,
right.
But more in sort of three categories of responsibility. A big part of what I do is the administrative support, making sure that our programs are run and solving problems. And so working with the departments, I certainly did all the recruitment for the directors and chief deputy directors to make recommendations. They're all appointed by the governor, but I do the day-to-day management sure. of their work. And then about a third of my time is spent in what I call sort of the positional responsibility of being secretary,
sure.
actually meeting with people and speaking and representing the governor's views and the positions of the state of California. I work a lot with our federal partners on the programs that we administer. So a lot of my time is spent representing California as the secretary. And then a significant amount of my time is what I like the most. I'm an old analyst. I like to dig in and solve problems. And so there are a handful of issues that I get directly involved with and do the research and reading and writing and working with staff. And that can be in any program area. So it doesn't go so much by department, but by what program needs my attention at any given moment.
Sure. And there's no shortage of them that probably need your attention at most moments, but
it is a challenge to prioritize yes. the use of my time.
And what is the term on the position?
It corresponds with his term. So
okay.
I was appointed and took office the day he did, January 3rd of 2011. And I will leave office when he leaves office. It isn't required to leave office. A future governor, and very often I kept a lot of the appointed positions that were here under the previous governor. And certainly many of the people that are doing their jobs are very able. And I would certainly encourage the next governor to enjoy the benefit of their leadership.
Sure.
But it is the governor's prerogative to change. I don't intend to stay. I
yeah.
came because of my commitment to this governor and his programs. I worked for him when he was governor in the 70s.
Right.
And so I will have done my time, and I'm very proud and humbled to have the opportunity to serve, but I'm glad there's a term of office.
Yeah. Is it bittersweet a little bit?
Well, I'm in the at the point now, 6.5 years in, where I'm really looking at what have we done to make government work better. It's been my highest priority is to, as in some modest way, restore some confidence and have the people who have to interact with government believe that this is their government and that we are listening and hearing. So transparency has been a priority, stakeholder engagement, honest listening, which is what I encourage with all of our departments. Certainly, they are very busy running their programs and they have a lot of expertise, but I try to counsel that we need to create room to listen to other voices and
right.
come with where we think we need to go, but be willing to pivot if a better idea is presented.
And interestingly, you actually had your start, you had referenced it a little bit, but you actually had your start in politics before your involvement in different healthcare organizations, an eventual role here for Health and Human Services. So can you kind of tell us your story that culminated in where you are now?
Sure. I actually started in government, not politics.
Oh, excuse me, yes.
No, I think that's an important distinction. I made it on purpose because I was a young analyst in state service when Governor Reagan was governor, and Governor Jerry Brown was elected in 1974, and he was 36 when he was elected. He began to assemble a team in 1975, and I was invited to work on his team on what I thought was a temporary assignment in the fall of 1975. And I was 24. I was very young, but he was very interested in bringing new ideas and people that had previously been excluded. So as a young woman, I was very much an affirmative action hire. He was very committed to opening up the government and making the government look more like the governed. Sure. So that people saw their government and believed that it represented them. And I ended up on this temporary assignment staying 7.5 years. I worked throughout his first two terms in government. And then my husband and I both grew up in the Central Valley, a small rural community, Hanford, which is south of Fresno. And he had gone to law school and was working. And at the end of the Brown administration, we decided to move home to the Valley. We had a year-old daughter, and we went back and lived there for 26 years. We grew up in Kings County, but we moved back to Tulare County, which is a very Republican part of California. And I always joke that being a Democrat in Tulare County was like doing missionary work. But it was a very, very important experience for me in what can happen when people put the D's and the R's aside and are really committed to the health of their community. I was very involved there. I started a business of my own. I was in private advertising and public relations for about 10 years. And then I went to law school when I was 40 and was practicing law and got recruited to the local children's hospital, Valley Children's Hospital near Fresno. Right. And that's how I got into healthcare about almost 17 years ago now, and was working on behalf of Children's Health and was invited to serve as the CEO of the Children's Hospital Association. My children were grown by then. So in 2006, we came back to Sacramento. Yeah. And so we have these two Sacramento bookends. And then who knew Jerry Brown would run for governor again?
Right.
So I also have the bookends of Brown 1.0 and Brown 2.0. So my only experience in government is really working for Governor Brown.
And so how do you think that the mixture of both working for government, not in healthcare at first, and then working in the private world. And then you mentioned the California Children's Hospital Association. I think you also had worked for Planned Parenthood and other healthcare organizations as well, or served in some of those other organizations. How do you think that that wide mix of experience prepared you for the role that you have now? Because that's a very wide swath of different perspective and opinions, I would imagine.
Well, I think what ties it together for me is fundamentally I'm an analyst. I love to solve puzzles. I love crosswords and jigsaws, and I like to take things apart and put them back together and figure out what needs to be done. And I'm a communicator. When I was in public relations, when I was practicing law, when I worked for the governor in the 70s, I was his legislative advocate. So I represented the administration views to the legislature. And in all of those, my advocacy and communication was based in the analysis of what needed to happen. So my pattern that goes through my career has been figuring out what do we need to do to make something better? Sure. And then who do we need to take with us? Who needs to agree with us? And how do we explain the need that we have in a way that someone owns it? I've always believed that the best way to get a problem solved is to help people think they were solving it in their own way.
Right.
And so the more you can explain a problem in a language that people can understand, the more likely they are to want to join forces with you and solve it.
And I would imagine that that's an effective tactic or policy idea, both within the state of California and convincing people, but also representing California on a nationwide scale. On that note, the Federal Health and Human Services Secretary, Dr. Tom Price, has been getting obviously a lot of press, I guess, recently, just with the attempted repeals of the ACA and the American Healthcare Act. How does your office relate to the Federal Health and Human Service office?
Well, we're partners with the federal government in a way that's similar to our partnership with the counties. We're each a different level of government. And, you know, over the 200 plus year history of the country, it's gotten complicated, as healthcare has. Everything
right.
is complicated, and it's usually complicated around money. We send a lot of taxes from California to Washington, and we get a lot back. And when it comes back, it is always with conditions.
Sure.
And so our Medicaid program is funded in partnership with the federal government. We have a state match, and there are rules associated with that. And so we have a lot of basically contractual relationships to administer the programs, but it's not just in healthcare. Our foster care program, our TANF, which is the temporary assistance for needy families, mm-hmm. most of our public health programs are funded in one way or another through federal grants or federal requirements. And then we have similar funding relationships with our county partners. So on an operational basis, we have a lot of relationships with different parts of the federal government. Most of them are at HHS, the Health and Human Services.
And you also, as part of your role, have to work in DC sometimes, correct? So what is your role when you're in, you know, the nation's capital versus when you're working within the state itself? What do you do when you're out there?
Well, mostly my responsibility is to either answer their questions or provide information about how programs are working in California. And certainly in the last 6 months, as the Affordable Care Act has been challenged, sure. we have had some significant success in California at making it work. And so I have been very eager to have any opportunity to explain why I think it has worked in California and showing that we are turning the corner, not just on the coverage expansion. We've certainly reduced our uninsured rate in California from over 20% to 7%.
Right.
But it's more than that. People are getting coverage. They're actually getting care. And the care that's provided is provided in new and different ways that is far more efficient and creating more value. And so I very much want to see people turning away from the political rhetoric and looking at the underlying policies, because the truth is the Affordable Care Act is based on Republican principles. It was a Republican plan in Massachusetts.
Right.
It was a Republican plan in California when Governor Schwarzenegger was governor. The Democrats have wanted single payer for a long time, and many still do in California want single payer. But we have worked to make the Affordable Care Act work on a private sector model. It's a market-based program. And I think if we could ever turn down the volume on the politics and get to a conversation about the policy, we could find some common ground, because millions of Californians are better off as a result of this program.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And to touch on that a little bit, we have had the pleasure on the podcast of speaking with Dr. Hernandez, our Senator Hernandez, who chairs the California Senate Health Committee, and the Insurance Commissioner, Dave Jones. But both of those interviews happened in a time where things were maybe more hypothetical. There hadn't been as much progress on the agendas of both parties, or with the repeal of the ACA or with the AHCA. And I know this is kind of a broad question, but I think it speaks to what you were just saying about dialing back the politics in the conversation. How would you characterize the current state of where we are right now with healthcare in the country?
Well, I think we're a little paralyzed right now.
Yeah.
And I think we were moving forward. Certainly, there was room for improvement in the Affordable Care Act, and many people were looking at ways that we could make it better. But right now, we're in a holding pattern, and that's going to start to show up in cost, because in uncertainty is expensive.
Right.
And as the insurance companies look to try to price their products for next year's plan year, they don't know what to predict. And so they'll be more conservative, which will mean we're going to start to see premium increases.
If they decide to participate at all.
California, we have good participation. I don't anticipate that there's going to be an exodus from our market for the reasons that I alluded to. We have made it work, and we're going into year four, and there's a lot of confidence in that. But there's going to be a lot of finger pointing when those rate increases start to occur over the next few months, and they could start as early as next month in some places. California, our rate increases on our individual market will be public in mid-July, but they will be public in other parts of the country sooner than that. And then there will be the politics again with the allegations that this is the result of the underlying law and it's showing that it's in collapse. But on the other hand, for the people that are making it work, they will say it was working. We were turning the corner. We were about to, you know, there were many successes, and it's being undermined by these policies. And so as much as I would like to get past that, I'm afraid we won't in California if they I joke often, you may have heard me joke before, that gridlock never looked so good. The right. law, while it is flawed and we would like to see it improved, it is the law and it provides very significant support to millions of Californians. And so if they can't reach agreement on a change, we can make it work the way it is. And we will continue to make it work for as long as we have to until we can get to an environment where we can actually have constructive conversation about making it better.
And what was the difference in the way that California set up their exchange that we're not one of those places that now only have one, if even any, insurance providers left?
Well, in the first place, we didn't have the partisan rancor that many places did. As I said, it was that elements of the Affordable Care Act were included in Governor Schwarzenegger's plan in 2007 and 2008. It didn't pass in California, but in his last year, it was adopted the last year he was governor, and he fully embraced it. And he worked with the Democratic legislature to establish the exchange, and he made the commitment to expand Medicaid under the term. So we, California, had fully embraced it, and we had a long history with a lot of advocates of consumers and plans and employers and providers, hospitals, doctors. We had a broad coalition of people who wanted to make it work. I've often said this is very much a team sport, and we worked together to build it. We also were able to recruit some of the best talent of people who understood how insurance markets work. We didn't have any enemies. We weren't throwing stones at anybody. We all came around a table and figured out how could we get the best value for California consumers and patients. And so we made some very hard decisions early on that led to a stable market. And our first year was successful, and success breeds success. So we had a lot of retention in our first re-enrollment. Our first 2 years of premium increases were under 5%. They were well below trend. Our third year, it was a little bit higher, but it was because the part of the law changed. It was understandable. And so we have built a reputation for credibility and trust and transparency. And we have a strong market. We have 1,200,000 members in Covered California, which is a market that the plans want to have access to. And we have 11 plans that are participating, so the customers want to buy on our market. So we have a rocky road ahead. There's no question. I don't want to be Pollyannish about this, but we do have a strong foundation that will serve us well in this very uncertain time.
You know, just thinking about that, there was something interesting that the insurance commissioner said when I was talking with him, because we were talking about the premiums at that point. And he had said, you know, kind of as controversial as it sounded, that it turned out that the penalty for not having insurance was maybe not high enough, because still people weren't necessarily signing up and moving that along. How big of a threat is it with the removal of that penalty altogether? Does that kind of pose one of the larger threats to the healthcare structure as we know it right now?
Yes, it does. And it is in the law. And we are hopeful when the House bill failed the first time, the president and Speaker Ryan both said that that was the law. They would implement the law. They continue to enforce the penalty on this tax year. But having said that, we also, through our marketing analysis and focus group and preparation for the promotion of our plan, have always used the carrot instead of the stick. We think having health security and knowing that you are not one health catastrophe away from bankruptcy is the biggest motivator. So most people buy, even, and as Commissioner Jones said, the penalty was relatively low given the cost of the premium, but it is important. It is a piece. And I think that's what the idea that you can pull out pieces of this, get rid of the penalty or change the subsidy to a tax credit, or, you know, this was a carefully constructed plan. It's sort of like a Jenga tower that is built, and you start pulling blocks out on the bottom and it starts to fall apart. So the most significant issues for us in going forward are the continued premium support that is frequently called subsidies, and the requirement and the mandate is both on individuals and employers that they provide insurance. So the enforcement of that mandate continues to be important.
Right. I recently had the opportunity to hear you speak at the State of Reform Conference, actually up here in Sacramento, and you had referenced some of your comments there before about gridlock. But I was particularly struck by your relative calm about the situation. Maybe that was just your professional speaking abilities, but that was prior to the actual passage of the AHCA in Congress. Have your feelings changed at all, or are you still feeling that we can still make something work?
Well, I hope that we can. Yeah. I'm a glass half full person. I read a report in the New York Times recently that Bill Gates had made a recommendation of a book that's now, you know, going crazy on Amazon. But the book was called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And it is, I haven't read it, or I just looked at a review of it. But the idea is that there is more good than bad, that we are fundamentally optimistic and we're trying to make it work. And I often call myself a passionate moderate. It sounds like an oxymoron, but I really think that it's very important that we enthusiastically embrace the middle and pragmatism and make things work. Sort of the rat in the maze, there's no cheese. Okay, I turn around and go through and I find another opening. Sure. And so part of the reason we were successful in building this over the last 6 years was because we were nimble and we were dedicated and we brought people together. And I think those are ingredients that still encourage me. California has a reputation for innovation, a can-do spirit, and I think that we will find a way to make it work. Certainly, we were on a path that I was encouraged to see changes in the delivery system, and I hope that we can maintain that. I just agreed to participate with a National Governors Association of about 10 states that are bipartisan, looking for ways we can continue the movement toward real reform in the healthcare delivery system.
Yeah. To stay on the topic of California, at that same conference, it was interesting in kind of in some of the breakout sessions, I had the opportunity to sit through two subsequent sessions. And the first was two Republican politicians from both the California House and Senate, both from rural areas of California. And then the subsequent session was two Democratic politicians, and they were also, they also represented rural areas. And it was very interesting because both groups referenced access to care as the biggest challenge that they face in those rural areas. However, the two Republican representatives referenced that as the reason that the Affordable Care Act was not working and why it should be rolled back. And the two Democratic representatives actually referenced how that shows that we should be expanding the Affordable Care Act to help reach those people there. You're from Central California yourself. First of all, it is a huge challenge. Providers are dropping out of those areas. You know, skilled nursing facilities are closing. Hospitals are closing. So how do you view the challenge of access in those rural areas?
Access in rural areas is really unrelated to the Affordable Care Act. It's part of what led to the need for the Affordable Care Act is access broadly. Yeah. There's a lot of disappointment and dissatisfaction in American healthcare. It's built up over time with lots of complications with different providers. Employer-sponsored care is very frustrating to people. And so a lot of what people think of in their hostility to Obamacare is that Obamacare gave it a name for something they were experiencing, even if they weren't in Medicaid and they weren't. In fact, Kaiser Family this morning just had a report about the levels of satisfaction are almost identical between employer-sponsored care and Medi-Cal. And so it really is a question about healthcare writ large, not necessarily whether you're on a government-supported program or not. And coming from a rural area, it is an economy of scale. When right. you have very large geographic areas with very few people, it's very difficult to get doctors or, and mostly specialists, having represented Valley exactly. Children's Hospital right. In Central California. It's the only freestanding children's hospital in the country that is not in an urban area. And it's very difficult to get specialists and subspecialists to live and work in an area that isn't urban. We right. are congregating in urban areas in this country and concentrating. And so getting services in those areas, if you choose to live in those areas, as I did for, you know, much of my life, you recognize that the trade-off is you're going to drive an hour to see a specialist, or you're going to go 2 hours up to Stanford or UCSF if you're in Fresno or Merced.
Sure.
So those are problems that are not going to be solved with a government program, and you can't force people to live where they don't want to live. The people who do live there are going to have to continue to accommodate the move and get to where the services are when they need them.
Does a potential rollback of, you know, here, obviously, Medi-Cal, do those rural areas get hit disproportionately harder than the metropolitan areas? Or is there just as high of a population of people in the metropolitan areas that are getting care through Medi-Cal that it would hit everyone more equally?
No, it is actually disproportionate to more rural areas. And, you know, it is income-based. And so where you have higher percentages of lower income people, you have higher percentages of Medi-Cal. And certainly that's clear throughout Central California and the rural area. There are fewer jobs, there are fewer economic opportunities. There's a number of contributing factors to that. But California is very dependent on Medicaid. We have a third of our people that are getting care. And the delivery system is dependent on this. What we used to call a safety net is now expanded into, you know, much broader dependence on the program.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up here, because you chair Cover California, what has that experience taught you about healthcare?
Well, I think that we are trying there to create consumerism where it doesn't exist. In the individual market, you really have people choosing for themselves. That is in a very different way than other programs, because most people get their insurance through their employer and they have a limited number of choices. They have a limited number of plans and the plans have a limited number of providers. So the idea of limited networks and limited choice, again, yeah, is across the spectrum of healthcare delivery. It isn't limited to Covered California or Medi-Cal. But in Covered California, you have individuals that are buying their own insurance. And we were able to create a very robust website that has apples to apples comparisons for the plans. We're improving the provider directories are not perfect, but we are improving them so that people can determine whether or not a hospital or a doctor that they want is in a plan when they buy the plan. That is driving change in the rest of the market, even though we've got probably 25 million people under coverage in California, and only 1 million of them are in Covered California. Mm-hmm. The rules that we established on Covered California are used in the rest of the market. And so it is having a disproportional effect, and I think a positive effect.
I think that one of the challenges, too, that I hear over and over is just messaging in a time where there's the news cycle just moves so quickly and the way that people get their news is so diverse. If you could send a message to the people who got their insurance through Covered California or are worried about what in California it might look like, depending on how the repeal of the Affordable Care Act moves forward, what would you tell them about their concerns or about what they might be able to expect from California?
Well, first, take a breath.
Yeah.
we're in business. Peter Lee is the executive director of Covered California. He and I met at 7 o'clock on the morning after the election and started with the messaging that day that we were just opening our open enrollment period for the season that we're in now. And we spent 48 hours refining and changing our messages for the weekend for our first media buys to let people know the doors are open, the law hasn't changed, your health is important to us, and we want to help you have health security. And that has been our message. It continues to be, we've got your back. We can't give false assurance and promise that nothing will change, but we're going to do everything we can to preserve the gains we've made and to keep marching forward for a good, healthy future for the people of California.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting with me for just a little bit. I know that I learned a lot here, and I know that the listeners will too. Thank you for having me in your office and for being on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.